You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although the stories Lydia Davis writes are often short, sometimes just a single sentence, the list of critics who've praised her carefully constructed prose is long indeed. And her latest story collection, Can't and Won't, has won rave reviews. Last year, Ms. Davis was awarded the Man Booker International Prize, Britain's highest literary award for a non-citizen. Her book is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux, and I'm very pleased it has brought Lydia Davis back to our show today. Hello.
Hello. Glad to be here.
Your writing can be difficult to characterize. Some of the pieces you've included here take the form of letters. Others could be described as essays or jokes or even fables. But haven't you said that you feel most comfortable simply by calling all of them stories?
That does seem to be the easiest way, rather than splitting them all up into little groups and deciding what they really are.
Well, of course, the term short stories takes on a whole new meaning when they're as short as some of the ones you have here.
That's right, yeah.
So is the term stories broad enough to include a wide range of material?
I think it is. My definition would be if it has even a scrap of narrative, like she wondered, and then the rest is just speculation. That's a little narrative.
Did Hemingway start that kind of story? People think about writing that kind of story.
You're thinking of the baby shoes never worn. I doubt it, because there are long traditions going off in different directions, different cultures.
This is your first story collection in 5 years. Did story writing absorb most of your attention during that time, or were you working on other projects?
Oh, no. I'm always working on many different projects, and I guess one of them was the translation of Madame Bovary, and that took 2 or 3 years. And I start many longer projects that I will now return to, I hope.
Do you go back and forth? Could you have written a couple of these stories while you were working on the translation of Madame Bovary?
Oh, yes. In fact, there's a whole group of them in the book called Stories from Flaubert that I found in his letters.
And did you just take them and give us little portions of them, or did you make them into stories of your own?
More the first. I found almost self-contained stories that he would tell a correspondent, and I would try to keep it as verbatim as I could and then improve it where it needed improvement.
Well, translators are tempted to do that anyway, aren't they? If you're translating something and you think, well, this is a really poorly constructed sentence in French, are you likely to give us a better constructed sentence in English?
It depends very much. Not lately, because lately I've been doing the very best books, and I will never do that with the best books.
And Flaubert was a perfectionist. Every sentence was a gem.
I would say just about every sentence was a gem. Early in my career, I had to work for money on books that I didn't respect, and then I would improve the sentences.
When you were here to talk about your last collection, you said that you were thinking about writing another novel. Have you started work on that, or are you still thinking about it?
Well, I may do what some so-called novelists do, which is write a book that's essentially completely nonfiction and then call it a novel, a long book about the generations of one part of my family is probably what I'll work on next.
A memoir.
Of sorts. I mean, it's
a semi-autobiographical memoir.
Well, It's going to be all true, I think, but then I'll just maybe put the label novel on it.
Well, your first novel, the only one, The End of the Story, that was straight fiction, wasn't it?
We can say that, but maybe I'm lying.
they give special significance to the title of this book, Can't and Won't. You have decided this collection into divided into five sections. What led you to arrange the stories in sections, and how did you decide which stories to include in each section?
Well, I have many more stories than usual in this collection. I think there are 120 or 122. And I didn't want to just sort of have a pile of little stories coming at you. So I looked to some, how could I arrange them? And I noticed that I had five letters of complaint in there. one to a peas manufacturer and one to a restaurant and so on. So I thought, well, I'll have five sections and put one letter of complaint in each section. And then it became very easy to, you know, take other sort of categories and divide them evenly through the book.
Are those letters of complaint the sorts of things that actually get mailed off, or the sorts of things that I tend to write in my head just to take care of a problem and then let it go?
Well, the very first ones did start as actual letters that I was intending to send, but then they became so strange that I really couldn't send them. In some cases, I would then modify them back down to letters I could send, and I did send them. I sometimes got answers.
Your book's title, Can't and Won't, is taken from a story in the second section. Could you read it for us?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
It's rather brief.
It's quite brief, four lines. Can't and won't. I was recently denied a writing prize because they said I was lazy. What they meant by lazy was that I used too many contractions. For instance, I would not write out in full the words cannot and will not, but instead contracted them to can't and won't.
Now, I'm assuming that some of your readers will think that this incident actually happened to you, since you have won a number of prizes, and you have been known to use contractions. Have you been called lazy by a prize committee?
No, it would be a very interesting and strange otherworldly committee that would decide that I was lazy.
Well, considering what you said earlier about the next book, you obviously are not upset when people assume that some of the work is autobiographical. But writers often complain about that. They say, I'm writing fiction, and even if this character bears certain similarity to me, I'm writing from things that I know, this is not me.
Well, I think what upsets, it's more than the personal here, would be somehow denying the work its own independent life. I don't mind saying that I use a lot of autobiographical material, but the piece should stand on its own. It shouldn't really matter whether it's me that inspired it or something else.
My guess is Lydia Davis. Her most recent book is a collection called Can't and Won't, and it's a wonderful title. Is that why you chose it for the whole collection?
Yes, I think it was. I had a long, long list of titles, using the titles of other stories and trying to decide which would be best. But I think Can't and Won't is the most definite.
In a review in Book Forum, Christine Smallwood wrote that you're a translator even when you're not working in a foreign language because you choose the words that you use so carefully. How long does it usually take you to settle on the exact word that you need for any particular story?
Actually, I write very, very quickly. I then revise very slowly, but the first draft is very quick, and most of those careful word choices come right out in the first place.
And when we spoke after your last collection of stories was published, you told me that you seldom have regrets about or feel an urge to make changes to a story after it's been published. Other writers have told me that as they're doing readings, they find themselves changing things all along.
I'll change a word here or there sometimes during a reading, but I go over the stories so many times, and I also let them sit for long periods. And I think that helps me be sure that I have what I want.
You seem to have a real knack for writing about ideas, objects, or situations that are instantly recognizable and familiar, but we don't normally pay much attention to. One that comes to mind is Idea for a Sign, and I was wondering if you'd read a little bit of that for us.
Yes, I'd love to. I'll read about half of it, I think. But this one's about a page and a half long. Idea for a Sign. At the start of a train trip, people search for a good seat. And some of them take a careful look at the people nearby who have already chosen their seats to see if they will make good neighbors. It might help if we each wore a little sign saying in what ways we will and will not be likely to disturb other passengers, such as will not talk on cell phone, will not eat smelly food. Included in mine would be, will not talk on cell phone at all, aside from perhaps a short communication to my husband at the beginning of the trip home, summarizing my visit to the city. Or, more rarely, a quick warning to a friend on the way down that I will be late. But will recline my seat back as far as it will go for most of the trip, except when I am eating my lunch or snack. May, in fact, be adjusting it slightly back and forth from time to time throughout the trip. Will sooner or later eat something, usually a sandwich, sometimes a salad or a container of rice pudding, actually two containers of rice pudding, those small ones, sandwich, almost always Swiss cheese, with in fact very little cheese, just a single slice, and lettuce and tomato, will not be noticeably smelly, at least as far as I can tell. Am as tidy as I can be with the salad, but eating salad with a plastic fork is awkward and difficult. Am tidy with the rice pudding, taking small bites, though when I remove the sealed top of the container, it can make a loud ripping noise for just a moment.
Does the humor automatically come out of the idea?
I think it does. I mean, the humor starts with a much briefer idea. There I am really on the train and think really I should wear a little sign saying that I won't talk on a cell phone.
Have you gotten good at finding a seat on the train next to someone whose habits won't annoy you?
Well, I could go on and on about the subtleties of choosing your train seat, but it's in the end a real gamble, and there's no way to guarantee it.
A number of your stories include trains, so you must spend a lot of time on them.
Well, I do live up in the country, and I do come down to the city quite often, and I love the Amtrak train. I really love it, despite all these little problems.
Do you write on them?
Oh, I do. I do. It's actually a very good place to write because I have to sit still for that 2.5 hours.
Another of your stories I could put in that instantly recognizable category is The Bad Novel. Your narrator has taken a single novel on a trip, and although she doesn't like it, she keeps on trying to read it anyway and eventually begins to think of it as a friend.
That's right. And that's about the whole story that you've summarized right there.
We've all had that experience.
Yeah, yeah. You're stuck with the novel.
You've labeled some of these stories dream. Did the ideas for those stories come from your dreams?
Well, it came from the idea of making a story out of a dream, and it actually started with a waking experience that was very like a dream. So they're a real mix of waking experiences and real dreams.
Do you keep a pen and pad beside your bed so that you can record your dreams immediately when you wake up? Because if you don't, at least my experience, usually a lot of it gets lost by the time you wind up telling it to somebody, if you remember it at all.
I actually have not done that regularly. I was never that interested in dreams per se, but then I became interested in making a story out of a dream.
We talked earlier about your complaint letters. I think one of the funniest ones is Letter to Frozen Peas Manufacturer. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, that's absolutely autobiographical again. All the complaints in there are my absolute sincere complaints.
What were your complaints?
The complaints...
People usually like frozen peas, even if they don't like other frozen vegetables.
Oh, no. The peas themselves were wonderful, but the package was misleading. The depiction of the peas on the package was misleading, and I wanted that business to stay in business, and I thought, well, you know, how foolish of them to show their peas in such a bad light.
When you were here before, you told me that you suffer from stage fright, which has made it a real challenge for you to teach. Has that gotten better over time, or do you still dislike speaking in front of a group?
Well, it's actually very selective stage fright, and I don't mind giving a public reading, for example, but it's in the classroom that I am absolutely terrified, and it hasn't gotten any better.
And why would that be?
I don't know. I've been trying to work on figuring that out.
Are you okay in front of a microphone on the radio?
I'm pretty good. Better than in a classroom.
Lydia Davis is the author of one novel, 6 previous short story collections, most recent of which, Varieties of Disturbance, was a finalist for the 2007 National Book Award. She is also the recipient last year of one of the biggest prizes in all of literature, the Man Booker International Prize. Her latest book is a collection of short stories called Can't and Won't. It is published by Farrar, Straus & Giroux. Are you working on another translation?
I'm actually, I've taught myself Dutch in the past 3 years, and I've been working on little stories from the Dutch steadily, constantly.
Writers that I don't know about, but I should?
Well, yes. You won't know of him unless you read Dutch. His name is A.L. Snijders, and I've been only really translating him.
Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Well, thanks for having me.